Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 3rd, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So it's kind of interview season for round three. I don't know if you noticed this, but I've seen like some waitlist movement, believe it or not, showing up on Livewire. What's your take on how things are going right now and where we are in the kind of cycle?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, this week upcoming, we're going to see some decisions rolling out for round three, which will be in combination to those folks also on the waitlist. So the next couple of weeks, round three, which is a much shorter cycle because there's less candidates in it and so on and so forth, we'll see a lot of decisions rolling out, and then things will start evening out, you know, in the next several weeks. Folks will then at that point know where they're heading in the fall and so on and so forth. But yeah, no, we'll see a lot of decisions coming out this week and next week, Graham.
Yeah, and I think this is where we really get into, I mean, I don't have a number in my head, but if I had to guess, I would say, you know, more than 95% of the class will be kind of settled. You know, it just, we get to a point where round three decisions are out, they're going to take some people off of the wait lists, and they're going to know as well from those round two deposits who's coming. And so, yeah, I think things will, as you say, settle in. And, you know, schools have a summer wait list in many cases, but there's usually pretty limited movement in that on that front. So, but yeah, best of luck to anyone that's still waiting on a decision. And don't give up hope. I have seen, I just actually saw, you know, some Wharton waitlist results posted where people were getting in off the waitlist there. And so, you know, usually that means there's stuff is moving around. You know, we'll see if there's more to come.
Yeah.
But hopefully people get some good news.
I mean, if Wharton's taking folks off the waitlist, then schools just in the next tier below will start taking folks off the waitlist just as a result of that sort of domino effect.
Yeah.
So that'll happen. And there is still some uncertainty out there, Graham. We talked about this a little bit before we came on air, but the dreadful state of what's going on in India right now in terms of the current state of the pandemic. I mean, the reality is, how, you know, will these folks be able to travel to get to the MBA in the fall? You know, there's uncertainty there. So I would imagine schools are still going to have to be a little bit conservative in terms of making decisions to make sure that they do bring in a class, assuming they're planning to bring in classes, you know, live classes and not hybrid classes or whatever they're planning to do. But there is still some uncertainty out there, Graham.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, you know, a lot of these schools are saying they want to be in person in the fall and kind of get back to normal to an extent. There is some discussion. We're actually trying to compile a list over here at Clear Admit headquarters of like what schools are going to require, because some schools are saying, you know, you're going to need to be vaccinated to come. So, yeah, we'll see how that all shakes out. Speaking of people getting into school and making a decision about where to matriculate, I do want to mention we're running a survey. I know I mentioned this in the past, but it's really important to take this survey. It's basically for anyone who's holding an offer to go to business school this coming fall. And we're actually giving away 20 $25 Amazon gift cards to survey respondents. And you can take the survey by just going to bit.ly/MBA admit survey. I'll actually put that URL in the podcast episode description, so it's really easy to jump over and take the survey. But we'd really appreciate it if you could take it. And then, Alex, to your comments about India, that's been really on my mind. And there was even a bit of a Livewire discussion to that effect. I mean, it's really catastrophic what's happening in India. I agree with you that schools may need to kind of come up with a sort of separate strategy for the Indian application population, right? So, for example, you're saying like it's possible that people may struggle to get visas or even to be able to come to the U.S. Now, I'm hoping that that's still a few months away. Maybe things will really shift dramatically as vaccines roll out and they get a handle on the crisis and do whatever locking down they need to do there. But it is a concern. I don't really know. I mean, we'll see what happens. But, you know, just when we kind of thought we were out of the woods on that front, it's really opened up a new level of concern from where I sit, at least.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, it's extraordinary that we're in this state more than a year after the pandemic began. in certain regions of the world. So, you know, within the EU, there's still, you know, high caseloads. Turkey's now going to lockdown. What's going on in India, Brazil seems a disaster. It's shocking. And the reality is that is, you know, these top MBA programs are taking candidates from all these different hotspots. So it's going to be it's still very tricky to figure out exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's definitely in the interest of, you know, folks in the US and the UK and, you know, where many of these top schools are located to kind of help these countries get through this crisis, because as long as there are these massive hotspots around, it could be challenging. And I actually wanted to mention, we got an email from a member of the Clear Admit community who I believe is now currently a business school student, but it's someone who, you know, has been a long time reader of clearadmit.com. And they wrote to me and said that this is an Indian national who's gotten together with a couple hundred, more than 200 students, admits and alumni from leading business schools. And they're basically offering free advice on the MBA admissions process in exchange for proof of a donation to charities in India to help with the current crisis. And so basically the way that it works is you go on their website, fill out some information about yourself, indicate which charity you've donated to, and then you basically can get signed up and matched with someone who's either a current MBA or you know, recent alum, and they'll kind of check in with you. I believe they'll even like look at your essays or talk with you about your overall admission strategy. And these are folks who've done it, right? So a great way to connect with someone, and all you have to do is donate to help this current crisis in India. I'll put the URL in the podcast episode description. It's a short link, so I'll get it in there. But I really want people to, you know, take a look at this. I think it's a great excuse to like connect with someone who's already been off to business school and to do a really good thing by helping those in need in India right now. So keep an eye out for that in the episode description and over at clearadmit.com. Alex, I don't know if, did you attend? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Do you have the name of the site? People can Google it to get it right, right?
I actually don't know off the top of my head because I didn't write it down, okay. But there's a URL. It's just bit.ly/3EWDD8A. So that's the URL. I'll put it in the episode description. Brilliant. Since it's kind of a jumble there. But in any event, Alex, did you catch our event that we did last week with JP Morgan and Bain? We had the heads of MBA recruiting from each of them hang out with us for about an hour or so and chat about how do you get a job in consulting or banking. Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't watched it yet, but the feedback that I'm hearing is absolutely outstanding.
It was fun.
Kudos to you guys to get those two folks who to contribute, because that's what business school candidates are going to business school for, right? The outcomes. So it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and we have a video of the webinar that we did, and you know, I learned a lot about recruiting at both strategy consulting firms like Bain and for investment banking or wealth management over at JP Morgan. So there's a lot in that webinar that you can tune into. It's over on the website, so check that out. We're going to keep the events rolling. We actually have an event this Wednesday, May the 5th, where I'm going to sit down with the directors of admission, or at least senior associate directors. It's a mix from Wharton, Columbia, Michigan, UT Austin, and Berkeley. And we actually have the director of admissions at Berkeley, I know, is joining us. And yeah, it's going to be... And Wharton as well. It's just going to be really interesting to kind of connect with them. And this is for people who are applying in the coming cycle. And we're going to ask them all kinds of questions about how to approach their application, you know, what to look for in recommendation letters, all kinds of stuff. So that's going to be fun. And that's just the first of two sessions. We've got one the following week where we have Duke, Cornell, Tuck, UNC, and Yale joining us. So these are going to be a lot of fun. I really like sitting down with these individuals. I know most of them since I've been in this industry for far too long, but it's just fun to connect with them. And Alex, I think you're going to try and join us for some of that, right?
The second one, yes, for sure.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Excellent. So you can sign up for that. There's a link on our website. You can sign up. You got to sign up in advance. They usually get really booked out, so check it out quickly if you're interested. And then, Alex, today we're going to jump on Clubhouse again, right, at about, I guess, noon Eastern. So a little bit later today, we'll be jumping on Clubhouse, and we're going to try to keep that Monday time slot going forward.
Yeah.
Mondays at noon Eastern. So stay tuned for that. Alex, anything else you wanted to share this week before we jump in and start talking about our wiretaps candidates?
No, I think we should kick on. Yeah.
All right, let's do it. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is an ApplyWire entry that we received, and the candidate is targeting Carnegie Mellon, Indiana Kelly, Michigan, Kellogg, and Wharton. They want to start school in the fall of 2022. This person is currently an Army artillery officer, and they have a number of ideas post-MBA, which we can get into. GMAT score currently is at a 680. They do plan to retake, I believe, and they also have a GPA of 2.67, 5 years of work experience. They are in the U.S. and would love to land in the Midwest after business school. They do mention that they are a weekly podcast listener and that our insights have helped them greatly in the application process, so that's great to hear. And you know, they mentioned they went to West Point and that they've got a lot of leadership milestones, you know, a lot of accolades that they've received in their career, but they know that their GPA is a major hurdle and that their current GMAT score at 680 is a bit below where they want to be. And so they're going to try to retake it and they're aiming for a 730. What do you make of this candidacy, Alex? Because there are some hurdles here.
Yeah, no, this is a really interesting candidacy because it really helps, I think, explain a really important point. When you look at the idea that admissions officers use a holistic approach in terms of reviewing candidates, which they do, especially at the top-tier schools, more so at the top-tier schools, they're going to look at everything and build a picture from all the different elements of the application. But having said that, if you're super strong in one area, that doesn't necessarily compensate for another area where you might be weaker. So I'm hoping that makes sense, Graham. It's a holistic review process, but it doesn't mean to say that if you score an A triple plus in one area, you have room to be a little bit lower in another area. You're really going to need, especially again as you're targeting these top schools, to be at least strong in all areas. And then it's great if you're so super strong in a particular area. So in this candidate's, for this particular candidate, let's assume that their work experience, so they're a military officer and they have great accolades and so on and so forth coming out of West Point. Let's assume that's the area that this candidate is just super, super strong. And we could take them at face value that that's the case. And I imagine that absolutely is the case. Mm-hmm. That won't compensate for the weaker numbers area, right, in terms of the GPA and the GMAT combination, unfortunately.
Right.
The top schools are going to want to know that this candidate, as great as he or she is in this one area, is going to do very well in the academic environment so that they're not struggling and taking time away from doing other stuff in the MBA experience. So I dwell on this point a little bit, but the point is, how do they take on this challenge of compensating for a 2.67 GPA in conjunction with the 680 GMAT? I mean, the 680 GMAT actually isn't too terrible. I mean, quite frankly, it's a pretty good score. But again, you're targeting the top programs and it's going to be below average. So they're doing the right thing in that regard. They're planning to retake. And absolutely, if they can push that quant score up, it's currently at 44.
Yeah.
If they can push that quant score up, that's going to help a lot. If they can get that quant score up to the average for the schools they're applying, that would be very good, sort of 46, 47 or whatever that might be, and get that GMAT into the 700s. With the GPA, you can't change the GPA, right? But you can take remedial action, whether it's taking additional coursework. In this case, I think they've identified that they're going to do MBA math. They could do HBS core. There are other things that they can do, but they have to do that. Hopefully do well in the sort of additional coursework thing. Hopefully do well in the GMAT. It's still going to be the one aspect of their candidacy that's going to hold them back and determine ultimately, in my mind, Graham, which school they end up going to. Because if, let's say, their GPA was 367 and not 267, and that GMAT was in the 700s, frankly, probably you know, they could cherry pick which school they'll end up going to. But unfortunately, that's not going to be the case in this point. So hopefully that makes sense, Graham.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more. And I think the point you're making is a really good one about how you can't really, so for example, you've got like five promotions at work and you work in a quantitative job, but you have really poor grades in anything quant and your GMAT quant is bad. You can't say, oh, but look at my work. It doesn't really, the schools don't like to dip cross, you know, section when evaluating you. They evaluate your academics using academic data, you know, so GPA, GMAT, quality of coursework, quality of academic institution you attended, etc. So, and I am worried about this candidate's current result. I agree that 44 on the quant of the GMAT is equates to like a 48th percentile. So they need to boost that up. I just feel like if they're going to make the case that they've matured and that 267's in the rear view, and we talked about this last week, you know, if they want to make that case, they need to have a really strong GMAT score. And they also need to, I think they're taking MBA math or HBS core, whatever it is. I mean, those two things could help. They need to do academic stuff to show that the 267 is not a big deal, right? So in any event, I hope that they can do that. They still have a lot of time and they have a good range of schools on their target list.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they've got Wharton on the list and they also have Indiana, right? So those schools are, you know, probably on the spread. They're kind of, you know, Wharton's like a top three school. Indiana's a top 20, right? So there's some range there. And I think as you correctly point out, that GMAT score and how high they can push it may really end up dictating a little bit as to where they're going to be competitive.
Yeah.
But I, you know, again, it sounds like everything else lines up. As you said, they have some interesting experience and could be a really strong candidate.
Yeah. I mean, I'm convinced if they can blow that GMAT out of the water, do well on the MBA math and really push that element, that they've got a shot at the very top schools. So I don't want this to be all doom and gloom. My point is more, you can be super strong in one area. Don't assume that's going to compensate for another area. You have to really take all that remedial action or whatever you call it. And I think this candidate knows this full well. So I'm sort of sharing that idea, maybe more just for the listeners more generally rather than this candidate in particular, because this candidate absolutely suggests they're going to retake the GMAT. They're doing MBA math. So kudos to them. Congratulations and thank you for the service. All that stuff looks really super good. So I do hope they ultimately end up at Ross or Kellogg or whatever that seem like they're really good programs to fit what this candidate wants to do.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Thanks to that person for posting and for their service. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received from someone who wants to start school in the fall of 2022, and they're applying to Columbia, Kellogg, Chicago, Wharton, and Yale. They currently work in asset management, but they're thinking of pivoting out of that and getting into consulting initially with Bain BCG or McKinsey post-MBA, and they have a 730 on the GMAT, 3.87 GPA. They went to a good school for undergrad too, which they share. And they also have 4 years of work experience. They're in New York now. They want to be in New York in the long term. But they like those programs out in the Midwest, particularly Kellogg and Chicago, kind of coming at the top of their list, they say. And they did indicate that there's a longer term interest in fintech. Okay, so it's not just, you know, they want to go and do consulting and stay there, but I think they're thinking consulting will be useful as they kind of pivot into a career in fintech as a way to sort of use all the skills they built in business school. But Alex, there was some dialogue on this candidate. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a number of posts where people were kind of weighing in, and I think you and I had some back and forth with the person, and you were saying, oh, if Columbia is on your list, apply ED, especially if you're kind of overrepresented, you know, white guy in New York or something. And so what do you make of this person? Because they have a kind of some decisions to make about what to do there with ED.
Yeah. I mean, if this person doesn't apply Columbia ED, they're telling Columbia, you're not my priority. If you tell Columbia you're not my priority, then good luck. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but I mean, I think we've heard their admissions folks say that in a lot more professional manner. But they're like, you know what? We ask people that really want to come to our school to apply early decision. We make that very clear. So if a candidate, especially a savvy candidate like this who's from New York, will understand the landscape and so on and so forth, if they don't apply early decision, they're sending a clear signal that I'm hedging. You're a good choice for me, Columbia, but so are other schools that I'm going to be looking at. And that's going to make Columbia a bit queasy in terms of making that admissions decision. So you're weighing that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, this candidate's New York, New York, New York, and they want to be in New York afterwards. So should they use the MBA to take a New York break, i.e. go to the Midwest or whatever, and do their MBA? So they're looking at the idea, should they take that break, step out and go to apply Kellogg, Booth and so on and so forth, and maybe Columbia's regular round, or should they just go all in and apply Columbia early decision? I would say just apply Columbia early decision. Apply to the other schools too, very good. So then it becomes the challenge. Let's say they get admitted early decision, Graham. Are they truly bound to that decision? And this is where I think it's a huge grey area. I used to work in Wharton admissions lots of years ago. I used to hate Columbia's early decision policy because they were the only school within that competitive set, i.e. that tier, that has that binding decision. So to me, we could talk about game theory and various other things, and quite honestly, game theory goes a bit over my head, Graham. I'm not as smart as you folks that go to these programs, but I just think it's very unfair. You're one of the programs in this competitive set has a certain set of rules that's different to the other programs. I just think it becomes very difficult. We do see season in and season out folks foregoing their quote unquote binding contract with Columbia. What's the cost? It's a heavy deposit.
Yeah, it's
anyway. I'll let you clean up the mess that I've created.
No. It's like ED or not ED. That is the question. Yeah. Right? It's kind of, but I think it does pose. You're right. I mean, they're the only M7 program that has a binding early decision. I would say, and they're pretty vocal about how if you love Columbia and know that it's for you and it's your top choice, you should apply ED. I think, then it gets, we see people doing all kinds of stuff. Like, so they'll apply as late as possible within the early decision round because it's a rolling kind of process. So they'll wait until the last minute, apply ED, and then they kind of hope that it takes a little while to get their result, that they drag out the interview, and that by the time they get accepted for ED at Columbia and have that like 2 or 3 weeks to put down a deposit, they start to get word from other regular round one programs. But I can tell you, I've seen a lot of people try this and it doesn't always work. Sometimes they'll end up getting, they don't get word in time. And so they have to deposit at Columbia and then they have to decide, well, am I withdrawing my other applications and just depositing at Columbia, which is the letter of the law. I mean, that's what, Columbia would want you to do. That's what you kind of agree to when you apply early decision. But do people break those rules? Sure. I mean, I've seen it happen. People will, deposit at Columbia and know that, look, if I end up getting into some other program on my list that I'm, wanting to go to, or I get a better scholarship with, I'm going to just forego the deposit. That's not in the spirit, I think, of what Columbia wants you to do. But as you point out, I think there were probably a handful of people at Wharton who, ended up coming to Wharton who had been admitted early decision to Columbia and they just lost their deposit. It's a really gray area. It is interesting how they're the only school that has that. I don't know what to tell this candidate in terms of like, should he take a break from New York or not? For what he wants to do, the interesting thing is that if he wants to work in strategy consulting and then get back into kind of fintech or really finance, I mean, Columbia is not a bad place to go, right? So, I mean, yeah, that's kind of why I think you were nudging him and saying, hey, just apply early decision. At the same time, he could do what he wants to do out of Chicago or Kellogg as well. I don't think any of these schools are going to limit him in any way. But it is challenging. I think, it does... it's also, I mean, as a bonus, like if you play early within the early decision round, you get your decision, like you'll be sitting pretty and know where you're going to go like many, many months before business school even begins. So there are some benefits, you know, to having this kind of early round. But yeah, it is supposed to be binding, and that creates some challenging kind of ethical and game theory issues around it all. So anyway, we can kind of leave it there, but I wish this person the best of luck. I did want to mention, this guy has, the numbers are excellent. You know, yeah. Work experience looks excellent. And so this person, I mean, they probably are competitive at other M7 schools and really competitive. So I don't know that... I wouldn't apply to Columbia ED out of like fear that that's the only M7 that might take them and that by applying early, they're going to, you know, increase their odds or something. I feel like they could get into another M7. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're obviously, as you say, they're from a bit of an overrepresented population. That just might make things a little bit trickier. But their numbers are outstanding. Assuming their work record is outstanding, they're doing some stuff in their outside of work activities, non-profit consulting. So assuming that's good, they're an impact person. This is an M7 candidate. My question to them is, do you want to get admitted to Columbia or not? If you do, you apply Columbia early decision.
Right.
If you are less concerned and maybe going 50-50 or whatever, if Columbia admits me or not, then yeah, apply regular decision, because that additional factor will be weighed in when they're reviewing your candidacy. Why didn't you apply early decision?
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, I want to thank that person for sharing their post. They also emailed us on the side and thanked us for some of the comments we provided on LiveWire, so it's good to get some further insights from them too. But let's move on and talk about our final candidate. This is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry from someone who, when they posted, were undecided about where to go. But thanks to our community and to the discussion that ensued, it sounds like they've made a decision. But I'm not going to reveal that decision just yet. So this person applied to Haas, Columbia, and Wharton. They're going to start school this fall, and they were accepted at Berkeley and Columbia. And along with that Columbia admission, they received a $60,000 scholarship. They want to work after business school in the tech domain. But it is like our earlier poster, they want to work in fintech. So keep that in mind. They had a 740 on the GMAT and a 3.9 GPA, so pretty stunning statistics. And they said that they were considering Haas for tech, but CBS offered this big scholarship, and they feel like it may open more doors to recruit for other industries too. They said they're interested in fintech, but also considering investment management, as they have a lot of experience working with buy-side shops in an advisory role. And so they think they're going to go to CBS. At least when they posted this, that's what they were thinking. They mentioned also that they're waitlisted at Wharton. So, Alex, do you want to kind of summarize what some of that conversation that ensued and what you think this person should do? I mean, they do reveal at the end what they're kind of leaning, but...
Yeah, no, I think this is interesting because on the face of it, you know, this person's undecided. They've got a scholarship at Columbia, and they're admitted, I assume, without funding from Haas on the waitlist at Wharton. So you'd think, well, you know, Columbia's in a higher tier than Haas, even though you would argue that Haas is sort of challenging that. But they're in my mind, Columbia is in the higher tier. Haas mm-hmm. is in the next tier down with Tuck and Yale, I think, maybe. So if you're going to get a scholarship at Columbia, it's in a higher tier. This seems like an absolute no-brainer. But so then it's like, well, all right, we look a little bit more closely at this particular candidate's situation, and their career goals are sort of helping sway their decision. So their technology focus, and the big argument there is, well, you've got to be on the West Coast, you go to Haas, you're right by Silicon Valley, that's absolutely fantastic. Or you know, other opportunities, West Coast might be more... appealing. So that's why this candidate, I assume, is a little bit undecided. But then they have this sort of, you know, potential side goals of investment management and so on and so forth. And that sort of might tailor more towards Columbia and so forth. So quite frankly, Graham, I just thought it was interesting in that regard. At the end of the day, Columbia does seem like the winner here with the money option. They're still on the wait list at Wharton. It'd be interesting when and if Wharton comes through, if that sways their choice at all, and so forth. But yeah, no, I mean, quite frankly, this person ends up going to Colombia, they're going to have a great time.
Yeah, and they did. So there was a bit of like a you know, discussion on the site, and the last post that the person shared, which is a comment from the, you know, the candidate themselves, was, "Thanks everyone for the advice. I just put the deposit down at Colombia, and I'm super excited." So they're going to go to Colombia, and I think the rationale, as you correctly describe it, was like, "Look, this is an M7 school. They're giving you money. You're not in at Wharton. You're just on the wait list. And while you're in at Berkeley, they're not giving you any money. And it's not like this is like a $10,000 scholarship. This is $60,000. You throw in the fact that they want to work in fintech or maybe investment management, and suddenly it becomes really clear. Yeah. You know, Colombia is kind of a real epicenter for investing and things like that. So I feel like it makes a lot of sense. Someone pointed out that, you know, what would be harder to decide would be if Wharton admits you off the list, because then you've got kind of presumably no dollars at Wharton versus 60 grand at Columbia. You know, but again, this person's deposited at CBS. It sounds like they're probably going to withdraw off the list at Wharton. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it's an interesting quandary. And I think one that was really well argued, and, you know, thanks to our community members for chipping in there and pointing out some of the rationale, and I think we steered this person in the right direction overall.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
So thanks to that person for their post, and best of luck at Columbia in the fall. But Alex, we've done it again. We've run through our Wiretaps entries for the week. I guess we'll be back in 1 week's time, and I'm hoping that we'll see some of our listeners turn up at our events. You know, we got the event this Wednesday with a whole bunch of top schools, and we've got Clubhouse tonight. So yeah, looking forward to all that stuff. We're keeping busy, and I guess I'll see you in 1 week's time.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham. Stay safe, everyone. Best of luck.